Welcome back to the Music History Project. Today we're going to share a recent interview we conducted with Justin Andrews, who is the grandson of Otis Redding. Justin is the Director of Special Projects and Outreach for the Otis Redding Foundation. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Music History Project. We are your hosts. I'm Dan Del Fiorentino.
I'm Suzanne Del Fiorentino.
And I'm Alex Rossner.
All of the content of our podcast is based on the Oral History Collection, which is sponsored by NAM, the National Association of Music Merchants. This collection is over 5,000 interviews and growing. To learn more, check it out on nam.org/library. Welcome back, everybody. Really excited about today's topic, near and dear to my heart, and that is the legacy of Otis Redding, one of my all-time favorite singers, an amazing man who, in addition to his great career that many of us know about and those great hit records and live performances, he had a real passion for educating young students in music. And we're going to talk a little bit about that with his grandson during an interview that we conducted at the NAM show in January 2024, and I'm really excited about it. It was a wonderful opportunity. Alex, were you there and had an opportunity to meet Justin?
No, I missed the opportunity. That's why I'm here. I want to listen to him in this podcast.
Awesome. I know Suzanne was there. She helped us record that interview.
It was really fun. Very articulate gentleman. It's amazing all the work the foundation is doing. We can't even really explain the breadth of what they do, so we encourage you to go online and look up their great work.
Absolutely. So with that, let's get started. Here's the beginning of our interview with Justin Andrews.
I am the Director of Special Projects and Outreach for the Otis Redding Foundation, also the grandson of Otis Redding as well. We've been in existence since 2007, right in Macon, Georgia. Our main focus and mission is music and education programs for kids, but not just music. It's more of music and the arts, because we feel that every kid deserves not only the music, and not every kid can sing or play an instrument or something like that, but a kid can dance or a kid can draw, or they like to take photography or videography, something in this arts realm to let their creative juices flow in the run of a day. Of course, back where we are, I mean, it's the arts are being ripped away so much from school programs that kids do not get to express themselves like they should. Of course, social media plays an amazing role in today's society and the growth of a young individual coming up in this world. And sometimes there are good effects that happen from it. And sometimes there's very hard, detrimental effects that happen from social media and seeing your peers and, you know, social media, everybody wants to show the good all the time, but they never want to show you what it took to get there. And a lot of kids just see finished products and think like, oh man, I want to be like such and such. And oh man, they did this and they've done that. And then I'm always, how did they get there? What did they do to get there? You don't know what they went through to get there. So I can always try to tell them sometimes social media is fake and it's planned sometimes, because you don't know who that real person is. And that's what we instill here at the Otis Redding Foundation, just letting kids be able to create anything they want to create. And we are supportive in any way, shape, or form that we can be to help these kids be successful in life.
Hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
What's cool is your approach, your foundation's approach, is everybody can make a difference with this mission.
Yes.
And I think this is an important point to make, because oftentimes we think, as a society, that, okay, well, that child doesn't have access because their school district, it would be too hard for me to give them mm-hmm. money and change all the policies of the school district.
Exactly.
And, you know, they're living in a neighborhood where maybe he doesn't have access to good teachers.
Exactly.
I mean, we make up a lot of excuses why it doesn't work. You guys cut through all that and say, hey, this is how it works.
This is how it works. And we also have the data to back it up to show how these kids excel in school and extracurricular activities for being involved in our programmings. I always say this as well. We always piggy. This is what we're doing, is piggybacking off of what my grandfather did back in the 60s. He was very, very big on education and kids continuing education. He held a summer camp out at the ranch, for a couple of years, of course, before he passed. So everything that he did while he was here, we just picked it back up and we're running with it. And I think he would be so proud of us and what we've done and how far we've come. If my granddad was still alive, we'd have 30 of these things all the way around the world. But always was big to my grandfather was taking care of home. And number one, we will always take care of home because we all still live there. So we got to protect the kids and take care of the kids that are in our society because they're the future. If we want our community to thrive and be successful years down the line, we got to take care of these kids now. And I feel like a lot of people kind of write these kids off a lot, but can't write a kid off because you never know what that kid could turn into. And you never know what you could touch by just listening or giving advice or anything of that nature. So, you know, kids are our wheelhouse that we will do anything we possibly can to help these kids succeed in life.
One thing that really impressed me during this interview was that even though Otis had died at such a young age of 26, that he himself was already involved in so many philanthropic endeavors. Mm-hmm. He was already giving scholarships. He hosted a summer camp for kids. Mm-hmm. I just was really amazed that at such a young age, he was already doing so much.
And giving so this, back.
Yeah.
Right.
So this foundation was really not just to honor him, but to honor his work and expand on his work he'd already started.
Mm-hmm. Continuing the legacy that he had already created. And that was his wife, Zelma, and then their daughter, who is Justin's mom. So it's kind of cool that it's still all in the family. It's very, very much a passion project for all of them, I know. And as you said earlier, Suzanne, the scope and the depth in which these people address that mission statement of theirs of getting music into the hands and to the voices of the young children that are participating is absolutely amazing. Just about every element of music education you can think of, they have explored and they have created opportunities for young people to be involved with music. I think that's just absolutely amazing.
And to create such a nonprofit venture is a very forward-looking kind of thing. I would think at his time there were not as many foundations, so many grants out there that you could do this. He basically Otis financed this himself. And but the concept of giving back and helping the people around you and inspiring people through music, that's a more contemporary idea, I would think.
Absolutely. And I love it that their passion is his passion. You know, it's in their blood, yes, but it's also in their heart. You know, it's why they get up every morning, because they have something to do. It's important to them.
And so what resources are available?
So one of the resources, things that we do, we do a lot. Of course, number one is what we do. We're working on our Otis Redding Center for the Arts. We have a smaller center that we have right now where we do music lessons from pianos to percussion, vocal lessons, keys, winds, strings, audio engineering, so on and so forth. We let kids experience that. We also have a summer camp called Otis Music Camp, which is for kids ages 5 to 18. And I'm sorry, not 5 to 18. They're 12 to 18 is what they are. And we've been doing that for 17 years, going on 18 years this June. It is a two-week program where we bring these kids into our program, and not only do they get to write and create and record music, but then we get to teach them the business. We teach them intellectual properties. All of our kids are registered BMI songwriters. All of our kids understand what it takes to do this industry correctly. They see everything that happens in this business and how easy it is for someone to rip off your works. And we make sure that we teach these kids, this is how you protect your work. And if you have your work protected, that means you can get paid for it. And we never expect any kid to do anything without some sort of monetary gain, because as I was always taught, if you're good at something, you never do it for free. So we teach those, that in these kids. And now these kids go out into the community and do shows and put out albums and singles and performances, and they are own little small divas in their own right because they understand what it takes to do it correctly. We always feel that we give our kids the best. They deserve the best. So everything that we do is top of the line and top notch. We never want to short the kids of any sort of experiences at all. And they understand that and they appreciate that. They always come back every year, love to see how they grow. And of course, the songs they write every single year are amazing. These kids, they go through a lot, you know, and you hear it in their songs. And it's incredible just to see their growth every year and what they are feeling at this time in their life and what they're singing about and passionate about. And we want to push that out there and let the world know that, hey, these kids are doing some real things down in Macon, Georgia. And it's incredible. It's been incredible over the years.
That's awesome. Very, very cool. So I think one of the germs that led to this foundation that you mentioned is your grandfather's summer camps. What did you learn about what he's did in those camps back then?
Well, what I've always learned was, number one, it was never a charge. He was always, number one, trying to take care of that, you know, that poverty-stricken area of our community, which is number one. Number two, he did the same things we did, bringing down these music industry professionals, letting these kids be able to talk to these different people that are in this business that they want to be in, and they get the real insight of what it takes. So that is what we have continued to do now. The kids got to sing, and they've been in music videos and so on and so forth. So like I said, everything that we're doing now is everything that he was doing back when he did his programs. We're just making it bigger and we're making it better, and we're just going to keep it going.
So as we mentioned before, three generations of the Redding family are heavily involved in the foundation. And during the pandemic, we got to interview Carla, Justin's mom, and she shared her thoughts as well.
It was wonderful. Yeah, that was during the pandemic. So it's a virtual interview, which is available on nam.org/library, which is where all of the interviews that we use for the podcast come from. We spent a little time with Carla talking about Otis as a big fan ever since I was a kid. I think I remember buying my first Otis Redding record in San Carlos at Rod's Rare Records, a wonderful place that my best friend Bob and I would walk to. And all the way home holding that record, I just couldn't believe that I now had an Otis Redding record. I thought that was the hippest thing happening, and I probably was.
I can really imagine little Dan coming from the record store with his brand new records.
And just to kind of give some context to the era of Mr. Redding, I think it's important here. He was born in Georgia in 1941, and as many know, passed away way too young at 26 years old in the plane crash in 1967. And just weeks after that crash, his biggest hit was released, which is what most people know him today as, and that is Sitting at the Dock of the Bay. Although for me, it was always Mr. Pitiful and I Can't Get No Satisfaction and those soulful tunes that he did at Stax Records that I really was most enamored with.
So now let's hear from Carla.
I was five when my father passed, but I have such great memories of him. You know, the great, tall, statuesque person that he was. You know, Dad was happy all the time. Whenever he was home, we as kids, and I say we, my two brothers, I'm in the middle of two boys. You know, we didn't quite understand what our dad did. We just knew that, you know, he'd come home and then all of a sudden he'd have to leave and go back. And my mom was the stern one. But when he was home, we could do anything we wanted to do. It was tons of ice cream, you know, for breakfast, because that is one of his favorite foods, is ice cream. There was a store here in Macon, Georgia called Baskin Robbins. And we would go in as soon as he got landed at the airport. We all pile in the car and we go to Baskin Robbins and sample every flavor of ice cream in that store. That is one of the highlights. And I, you know, I'm not even an ice cream person today, and that may be why, because I ate so much ice cream. But he was an amazing family man. And, you know, when he and my mom were home, it was just peace and comfort and laughter. And, you know, then she'd cry. I'd see her cry when he had to leave and we'd cry. But then he wanted to make sure that he always got back home. And I think that was the purpose for him purchasing the plane, is that he wanted to be able to fly out, do his shows, and fly back in so that he could spend more time at the ranch and at home. So yeah, he was an amazing individual. And as we walk through this city in Macon, where he did his business, and even in the community where we live out in Jones County, you know, the people, individuals, people don't even know who we are. And they just talk about what a great person Otis Redding was. So that means a lot. It really means a lot.
Absolutely. He had quite an impact on so many things, you know, yes, and including, like you were saying earlier, he was very philanthropic. All those organizations that he helped, there are so many of them, that was really seed money that helped them establish who they are. And some of them are still around today, which I think is amazing.
Which is absolutely amazing. He was, you know, he would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it, because that's the kind of heart that he had. Even before my father passed in 1966, when he bought our ranch out in a rural area in Jones County, he hosted his first camp with about 600 school-age kids, and had industry professionals come in and talk to the kids about the importance of an education, as well as connecting it to music and the arts. So he started this in 66, was planning to do it again in 67. And of course, I think that was his busiest year that he didn't get to do it, but it was on his radar to do every single summer, to host public school kids to come out and experience industry professionals, as well as talk about music and arts and the importance of an education.
It must be really exciting for you to continue that in such a dramatic way.
Well, it is. It's certainly, you know, my family and I work so hard to look for opportunities or ways to keep my father's legacy very relevant in all realms of the world. And we wanted people to understand that it wasn't just the music that made him. He was a very philanthropic person. He was a huge proponent of education and the importance of all kids being provided a top-notch education. So, you know, when we formed in 2007, we were like, this is another way to show people who Otis Redding really was outside of just the music.
That is fantastic. And I wonder, Ms. Carla, if you wouldn't mind providing us with some of your favorite anecdotes of the impact that this has had on the kids that go through the program.
Oh, wow. You know, there's so many. You know, our biggest success story is a young gentleman named Roderick Cox, who is an African-American orchestra conductor living in Berlin. And Roderick was like our first real young person that we supported that came through our programs. And he needed a French horn to go to his undergraduate studies at Columbia State University, studying music. And my mother provided him with his first French horn. After that, he wanted to go on to Northwestern and do his master's studies. So we sent him to the Czech Republic. We sent him to Prague. We sent him to Montecito, California for all of these workshops so he could better his craft. And finally, we thought that he would just be a member of an orchestra. But then he came to us and said, I'm going to be an orchestra conductor. And my mom thought that was just amazing for him to take that turn in his path. And Roderick is doing amazing things. And so, you know, all of our kids that come through our program are graduates. We've seen about 1,000 graduates. They've either gone into the entertainment business just on the admin side, or either they're musicians themselves. Some of them have already released their first albums. Some of them are background vocalists for, you know, big celebrities. They're just doing amazing things. And the inspiration that we have given them through our programs has just been amazing. And it's so rewarding for us to see that we've made a difference in the life of these young people.
We just heard from Carla, and I just want to say she did a good job raising her son. It was a pleasure to meet him.
Yes, it sure was. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And one of the highlights for me as a Nerdy fan was just being able to talk to Justin about the amazing recordings that his grandfather did. And of course, those live performances. I remember when the Whiskey A Go-Go from 1966 were released, those live performances were just absolutely incredible. And we got to talk a little bit about it during the interview, which was really fun. I think we were kind of both nerding out a bit.
No doubt you listened to the Whiskey A Go-Go
yes.
performances when they were finally released.
Yes.
You know which ones I'm talking about.
I sure do.
And what was your thoughts about listening to that?
I mean, it was just, it was incredible because, you know, Otis doing live things, he never, as I listened to him doing live things, and of course, listened to studio recordings, his lyrics never matched up. Never matched up. The studio recording would be one thing. He's doing a live show. He's like, I better make up my own lyrics right here and insert in what I want to insert. So it's always great, especially listening to those couple of shows that he did and how different one set was from the other set. And I was like, this guy is just like, this is what I'm doing today. And so, yeah, the beat and the melody may be the same, and maybe this chorus may be the same, but I'm going to switch up some stuff in these verses, and it's almost kind of like a personalized Otis Redding experience that I've always thought about. So just hearing him live, especially at the Whiskey, was, it's always funny to me because I'm like, where did that lyric come from? Like, what were you thinking at that point in time? But okay, it fits. Let's roll with it. You know? So definitely any of those live recordings are masterpieces in my eyes.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. My 2 cents on that is he was just kicking that band's butt.
Oh my God.
Over and over again. And it did. I thought he just lost track of the lyrics because that wasn't as much importance to him as it was getting the beat going.
Yes.
And getting those people off their seats.
Yes.
That's, that, you know, so, oh, yeah, yeah, that's right, I'm singing this song. It was, you know, I mean, it's like, let's get this song going.
Exactly.
And let's, I love
let's
it.
Pump
I
it up. It. Let's yeah. get it going. Let's get it going. Let's get these people something to dance and, yep. and you know, have fun around. Mm-hmm. Of course, he had his ballads, his soul ballads, you know, that are, you know, those ones that you listen to over and over again. But that up-tempo Otis Redding is, that is
fire.
A force. That is a force, man. You know, looking at him and he's sweating and he's on his knees and he's, you know, and holding my, and I'm like, man, this guy is amazing. I've never seen anything like that. So, you know, like I said, it's incredible just to be born into this legacy. And, you know, it's always really weird when you're born into a legacy and not having the opportunity to, of course, you know, meet your grandfather and mm-hmm. interact with him. But just that legacy and the stories and, of course, my grandmother and everything she's told me feels like I've known him forever. So, you know, it's just a blessing that we continue to do this every day and something that we enjoy. We eat, sleep, and breathe Otis Redding 24/7. So it's fun. It's always fun and always full of interesting opportunities for all of us to push Otis Redding and, of course, the foundation across the world and yeah. show people what we're doing.
What a great way to have his name remembered.
Yes. What's a better way than that? What's a better way than having one of the greatest soul singers of all time connected to a foundation that is helping kids try to do the same thing and helping kids being exposed to music and the arts and giving them a comfortable place that they can express themselves in a comfortable environment without being judged by everybody else. Mm. That's what I think is the main thing. Like I said, the Otis and music and the story, that's always going to be there. That's never going to change. But us continuing this legacy, we get to rewrite history every single day. And that's the most important thing to us. You know, it's always incredible every day. It's incredible.
All right. Well, that was Justin Andrews from our 2024 NAM Oral History interview. And what a great delight that was. And I'm so glad that you all tuned in for this podcast to learn hopefully a little bit about the amazing Otis Redding Foundation, the great work that they're doing, and maybe inspired to listen to a few tunes of Otis tonight.
Oh, absolutely. We'll look up Otis Redding's music tonight and listen to it.
And I'm going to say it again, please look up the foundation and the great work they're doing and figure out a way to help support them. And with that, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Music History Project. This has been Dan Del Fiorentino,
Suzanne Del Fiorentino,
and Alex Rossner.
If you like what you heard today, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us some feedback. If you have ideas for future podcasts or recommendations for interviews for the Oral History Program, please send an email to library@nam.org. That's library@namm.org.